Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Clash of the Titles, the podcast that sees two movies with something in common go head to head to see which one does it better. And welcome to part two of this week's Furious Father Feud. So on Monday's episode, Arnie managed to get Jenny back in 11 hours. And today we discover that anything Arnie can do in 11 hours, Liam Neeson can do in 96 as he heads to Paris to rescue his daughter Kim and her ridiculous run after her trip abroad turns into the holiday from hell. Sex traffickers will do that. Thankfully, Dad has a very particular set of skills that he's acquired over a very long career, which are going to come in pretty handy as we take the time to talk 2008 Taken. So, which movie will emerge as champion this week? Let's find out. It's Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken!
You don't remember me? We spoke on the podcast 3 days ago. I told you I would find you. Hello, Clash Podders. I'm Alex Zane.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
I'm Chris Tilley.
So welcome to this week's show, the second show of the week. Don't forget, I'm just going to do this at the very top of the show to follow us on Twitter. If you use Twitter, there's loads of stuff on our Twitter. It's at Clash Pod, extras about each movie we cover. And once again, I know I sound like a broken record, but it is massively helpful if you could take the time to rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. Right, my choices this week. We did Commando on the Monday. Taken today, I'll remind you of the connection. Kidnapped daughter, time for a slaughter. So, Chris, it's a grower. It's a grower. Chris went Commando on Monday, which means... Victoria, you had Taken. Now, I remember when I gave you Taken last week, you were very excited.
Yeah, I was. I will. Let's just get into it because I love this film. Okay, you ready?
All right. Yeah, it's the turn of Taken. Victoria, take us on a journey.
If only I'd sold the car, Oscar Schindler sort of said. Then he thought, I know how else to make a shit ton of money, and that's to embody everyone's favourite Black Ops badass turned sad sack dad turned badass again, as Taken's Brian Mills, a man who you really shouldn't lie to because he's right about everything and he will find you out, especially when it comes to nipping off to Europe to follow you too, a phase all 17-year-olds go through, apart from the U2 bit, obviously. When Brian's daughter Kim is kidnapped because of not listening to her dad, he saves her from a life of sexual slavery by fighting his way through the criminal underworld of Paris, leaving a trail of dead Albanian gangsters and shooting his mate's wife in the arm even though she just made him dinner, so badass, in order to bust a human trafficking ring wide open, culminating in a fight on a boat where he rescues his daughter from a chunky pervert, all the while successfully resisting the urge to say, I fucking told you so.
Chunky pervert, band's name. Called it.
Oh my God, I had to like...
We are chunky pervert
around Europe.
Yeah, I had to rehearse it. Because like, when I wrote that down, I just did that thing, you know, where I really make myself laugh. And it's like, I can't just keep doing it. So I've been, yeah. I've had to
hello, Europe! We are chunky perverts!
Supporting you too.
Fucking you too, honestly. Fucking. When you just said about Kimmy's run, I'm sorry, that caught me by surprise. I just think I laughed in your introduction. Her run is bonkers. Like, she looks like Bambi. Like, it's just, I know she's trying to be innocent, but it's just, it looks like she's just learned to walk.
Do you want to talk about this now so it's done, or do we want to wait? Because I mean, the run, what's crazy about the run is that it's like she's got three different ridiculous runs. She doesn't have just one. My personal favorite is when she meets Dad in the restaurant and she's so excited to see him, but she runs with her arms straight down next to her side. She doesn't move her arms at all and just launches her whole body forward and uses the momentum to carry her into his arms. It's nuts.
Like,
I got fascinated with the making of this movie, and I wanted to hear whether she had anything to say. And the only thing I could find on what she had to say is she describes Kim as being very young and naive. And yeah. I'm like, she's 17, Maggie. She's 17. Like,
and you're 25.
You're 25. But do you not remember what you did as a 17-year-old and specifically the way you ran? Because you have, as a human child, learnt to run by 17.
She's called Maggie Grace, and ironically, she doesn't have any.
Oh
very good. Very
there
good.
It is.
Hi, Daddy.
You were supposed to call me when you left.
There's someone here.
What?
Oh my God, they got Amanda! They got me.
All right, listen to me. Go to the next bedroom, under the bed.
Tell me when you're there.
Now, the next part is very important. They're going to take you. I don't know who you are. I don't know what you want. If you're looking for a ransom, I can tell you I don't have money, but what I do have are a very particular set of skills. Skills I've acquired over a very long career. Skills that make me a nightmare for people like you.
Where are they?
If you let my daughter go now, that'll be the end of it.
You have a 96-hour...
To what?
To never finding her.
No!
But if you don't, I will look for you.
Where is she?
I will find you. Then I will kill you.
Good luck.
I mean, for once, I would like to do the factual bit of when I first saw this film, because normally in this section, I'm just like, oh, I saw it. Why does it matter where I saw it or who I saw it with? But I remember the first time I saw this very clearly. So now this is good because I sound like Chris. So this is why this is the point of this section.
What everyone's aspiring to.
Yeah, exactly. I finally come up to your standard. I saw this on a cruise liner and it was a showing of Taken with all the swearing taken out, and I was off my tits on gin slings and I couldn't understand why there was no swearing in this film. And then I realised that the cruise people had taken out the swearing because most of the audience were of a certain age and it would have upset them. So I saw a very sanitised version of this
Vicky,
film.
What did they do with the violence? Just
as that was it. In it. Yeah, that was
that
fully
makes no
in
sense.
It.
That makes no sense.
I know,
sense.
But just no F words. It's mental.
Oh, God.
I know. So when did you see it?
Alex?
I had to interview Mr. Liam Neeson in 2014 for Taken 3, and I hadn't actually seen Taken or Taken 2. So the first time it was on, it passed me by. So it was 2014 when I watched this movie for the first time, and I watched the trilogy in order. So Taken and Taken 2, then Taken 3, which, as you can imagine, was an experience of diminishing returns.
I went to the press screening of this, and there was a bit of hype around it because of the trailer. Everyone loved the moment in the trailer with the famous Liam Neeson speech. So, I don't know. It was a critic screening, and they can be pretty quiet and solemn affairs, but it properly had people cheering. This film did. And you could see what a crowd pleaser it was being in that room. And so I have fond memories of seeing this. And then I saw 2 and 3 in the critic screenings as well. And exactly what Alex says, diminishing returns. So, yes, the best of the bunch.
Yeah. Okay. I'll do a little bit of background, but I really want to talk about the film. So let's not go wild in this section. I remember it really particularly at the time, because it's when I used to work as a scriptwriter's agent. We would have constant meetings around this time in like the 2006, 7 and 8 that everybody wanted a European set thriller because Bourne had done such great business and it's cheap to film comparatively. And people put down a lot of the success to the brilliant locations. And so, you know, to be able to run through the cities of Europe, people were convinced that if you could do that, you'd have a hit. So this was made through Europa Court, which is Luc Besson's company, and he co-wrote it with someone else whose name I did not write down, which is disrespectful, but nonetheless. And it was going to be Jeff Bridges, I read, in the lead role, but Liam Neeson took it so that he could have the martial arts training, so he says, because he was not known for this sort of thing, which is what you forget, because now here we are 12 years later. Do you know this idea? I read this in an article, I think it might have been Empire, about the idea of the January Neeson. Do you know this?
I don't know.
So the January Neeson... if I send you the link to the article, you should put it up because I'm basically like reading verbatim from it now. But because, so Taken does the rounds in Europe and it just didn't, you know, it didn't sort of like set anything on fire. So it was given a release date in a January, sort of like a bit of a graveyard slot. And obviously it went nuts, partly down to, people now think, the scene that we'll get to, which is the speech. So because of this, people try and copy that formula, which is Liam Neeson as a broken man. No one believes him, but he's the best man for the job. And then they release it around January, February, and it makes loads of money. So it's called a January Neeson. So you've got stuff like The Grey, which is time. Unknown, Taken 2 and 3, I don't think did brilliantly, but I'm sure they were pretty
cheap. No, they did. They did.
Oh, yeah, they made a lot more.
Yeah,
oh, did they?
I mean, because I was going to do a whole bit about the fact that Taken is R-rated and Taken 2 and 3 are PG-13 and why the hell would they do that? Adding about $200 million to the box office is why they did that.
That makes sense, yeah. Well, this is the thing. People say that this, you know, Taken as a film franchise can kind of be attributed to the success of that scene, of the phone scene, and Liam Neeson's performance. Because as much as I love this film, and we'll talk about it, once we've reached the high point of that scene, it doesn't really recover from that high point, even as an action film.
Just to clarify, you're not reading anymore. These are your opinions, because I know you said you were reading ad verbatim. And I just...
that's my opinion.
Okay. And I just wanted to make sure that Chris got your note at the top of that he should put the article up, which is the little command there for you. Chris, did you write that down? Because I know Vicky doesn't really use our Twitter account, but you've been told to now put that article up on Twitter. No, okay?
She doesn't use our Twitter account. She just lurks and reads it and then messages when she's annoyed by something.
That's exactly right.
She's the party guest who hides behind the curtain listening to everyone talk about them. Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Anyway, so let's talk about the film.
Hang on one second here, because you touched on it, that what? This movie overnight turned Liam Neeson into the action star that we know Liam Neeson as now. Because like you said, before this, he was really only known for what? Kinsey, I guess. That was the only movie he was known for before this.
Schindler's List.
What about Schindler's List? Like, Schindler's List. Oscar Schindler. Yeah.
No, but, well, I mean, but Kinsey was the movie. I'm not sure if you saw it, the one with Alfred Charles Kinsey. It was his biopic.
Oh, hang on.
He appeared in it alongside Tim Curry.
Who else is in Kinsey?
Yeah, can't believe you were going to go, Schindler's List, like I didn't know. I was doing my Tim Curry reference.
I'm really sorry. That's exposed a fault line. Oh, dear. Right, are you done? Yep. Can we talk about the film?
We didn't even need to do it this week and you messed it up.
I will say this. Liam Neeson did not think this was going to be a big movie for him. In his own words, and this is a quote, he thought it was going to be a little side road for his career and expected it to be a direct-to-video release. Now, I watched the French making of Taken, which is called Le Making of, genuinely.
it's called Taken.
No, the Americans were subtitled in French, and there were interviews with Pierre Morel, the director, that weren't subtitled, so I've no idea what he said. you kind of get the vibe, maybe, that Liam Neeson thought this was going like direct to video by some of the things he says on the talking heads that he does. Because it feels like he's just going through the motions. I won't lie. It feels like someone said to him, like, okay, Liam, this is for the promo of the movie. We really want to get across that things are fast-paced with emotion and, you know, that the movie's good. But obviously put that in your own words and elaborate. And Liam Neeson literally goes, I like the script because it's a good, fast-paced thriller and it's got an emotional heart. and that's it. And then my favorite quote is talking about Pierre Morel. Liam Neeson says this, and this is a direct quote in the making of Pierre Morel. He says, he trusts me enough to know that I trust him, you know?
That's how I feel about you guys.
No, Liam, I don't know. What the hell does that mean? He trusts me enough to know that I trust him, you know? I was like, what, of Maggie Grace, he says, any scenes we do, she's there 100%.
That is so lazy.
Is she there? Yes, 100%. And then there's a bit where he's talking about playing a father whose daughter is kidnapped. And he starts going, because as a parent, you fantasize about what you'd do to those people if you'd go out and seek revenge. Stop, Liam. Stop. This conversation doesn't end well, as you will find out in a few years' time.
Moving swiftly on.
My final thing is from Maggie Grace, who says, completely straight. She says that her worst fear, and isn't this weird? Because her worst fear is being kidnapped by sex traffickers while on holiday.
Oh my God, same.
I was just like, that's uncanny, because that's what the movie's about, isn't it?
What a wild coincidence. Bonkers.
Oh, all right, I'm done. That was all. You can find all of that in Taken, The Making of.
Okay, so as Chris said in the Commando episode, the first 4 minutes of this film also cleanly and hilariously establish absolutely everything you need to know about your central character. He is a rumpled dad. The world is against him. His ex hates him. He's usurped by Kimmy's new stepdad, Stuart, who's a dick, because at her birthday party, he buys Kimmy a karaoke machine and Stuart gets her a fucking horse. What a dick.
Yeah, but Stuart, clearly has his own particular set of skills, because somehow, and I think we can all safely say, Kim isn't the brightest spark. But he still manages to sneak an entire horse into a party without her noticing. It's like he just brings it out from behind some trees and it's like, good job, Stuart. Stuart is also the stepdad from Terminator 2. John Connor's stepdad in that.
Oh, is he? Yeah, oh, that's interesting.
Good line in stepdads, yeah.
Okay. Again,
they really hammer home that Brian is big on attention to detail when he's wrapping the present and maybe a bit OCD. We keep getting told he has trouble following the rules. I think his wife
it's
says
so
it.
It's so perfect.
His friends say it. I mean, he's a maverick. We get it. You only need to tell us once, but they just keep hammering it home.
I think it's brilliant. I think that... No, go on.
No, I was just going to say they also do that thing of making sure we know he's a good guy, which is a trope that I'd sort of not really noticed before in movies, where if you want your hero to seem like a good guy, he will make engaging small talk with small business owners, as he does when he's... He's purchasing that karaoke machine from what is definitely an independent electronics store, and he's having a great time chatting away, having a great time because he's a good guy.
He's a good guy because he barbecues meat as well. Don't forget that. That's how you put that across, because he's a man and he's a dad and he's... Who wants your steak rare? I do, Brian, because I'm a fucking man. Yeah. I love it so much.
But that barbecue, it's weird because like he's sort of set up as a really good guy, and then you meet his old battalion, these guys who he's having the barbecue with, and they're sort of like... On the surface, you're like, all right, so they all get on, they're all telling stories, they're buddies. But a lot of the stories they tell are sort of about Brian being a bit of a dick. Like, and yeah. they sort of pass it off as a funny story, but you can tell there's underlying tension about the fact that they were all on a mission and the rest of them nearly died because he went home for Kim's birthday.
Oh, and yeah, like, never misses a birthday. That's right.
Do you remember that, Brian? He's like, oh, yeah, well, I did tell you. And they're like, uh-huh, but nearly died. So I don't know, you know.
But that's the thing. The point of that scene is all scriptwriters get out of jail free card. It's like, if someone mentions Hezbollah, then they're a badass. So it's like, they're just like, barbecue meat, birthday, Hezbollah. Oh, okay. It's so fucking great. It's brilliant. So we've established that Brian really, really loves his daughter and would do anything for her, including embarrassing himself in front of Holly Valance when he says, my daughter wants to be a singer, to Holly Valance. And I would say, Brian, you're fucking fired. I am busy being Holly Valance. Well, I don't give a shit.
And also, are you going to... I don't know. Are you going to go... Of all the people you could ask, is Holly Valance your go-to?
She's playing She-Ra, who has sold 20 million records before the age of 25. Holly Valance released 4 singles, then married a property tycoon.
She did, She did.
Alex, I wanted to ask Alex, you host a lot of these premieres with Tom Cruise, Will Smith, Tom Hanks. What would you do if one of the security men, what would they do, went over and asked Tom Cruise or Tom Hanks about his daughter wanting to be an actress? It's not the done thing, is it?
It's inappropriate. Her response is a little bit cruel, but like someone would have pulled him to one side, I imagine, sat him down and gone, Brian, dude, she was literally on her way to stage. You have been standing in the corner of that room for a while. Like, you could have used a moment. Your attention to detail is bad here. This is bad attention to detail. Just walking out the fucking door.
You're literally breaking protocols. So unprofessional.
You right now, Brian, you are the problem that you have
You're
been
the
hired
threat.
To solve.
You've become the threat, Brian.
You know when we said we need you here to stop people coming up to her asking questions? You're that guy, Brian.
So after a bit of wrangling with Kim and Lenore, like, Brian has got a very persistent habit of using diminutive forms to the women in his life. So it's Kim, but she's Kimmy, it's Lenore, it's Lenny. And it's like, come on, Brian. Again, attention to detail. They've said it's Lenore and she said it's Kim, but whatever. Kim wants to go to Paris, and he says the most dad thing ever. She's like, Daddy, I want to go to Paris. Why do you want to go to Paris? It's like, rather than being like, oh, okay, sweetheart, we can talk about that. He's like, why fucking Paris? Fine. Signs the papers. Kimmy goes to Paris with Amanda.
Because this whole Paris thing, because I was sort of thinking about it. It's a weird thing, because as the audience, when he's going, you're not going to Paris, like, you're like, absolutely, because fucking shit's going to go down and Brian is going to be right. But that's because we know we're watching Taken. In reality, I was trying to work out, is he actually being a bit unreasonable? Is it all right for a 17-year-old to go on holiday with a friend to a country, you know, 3,000 miles away? And I think it is, isn't it?
It is.
It definitely is.
Yeah. Especially when she says, it's a good line, it's boring, but it's necessary. Amanda is 19. And it's like, once someone's overage, then you think, oh, okay. But I didn't go when I was 17, but I'm sure I tried to save up some money to go interrailing and spent it on fags and so couldn't go.
And the mum even knows that she's going to follow the band from city to city, and she's cool with it. But I guess the issue is, because of Brian's job, he's seen the worst of humanity. And so he's trying to protect her from the things he's seen, a.k.a. Yep. sex traffickers. So, and it also means that we can have a nice strain of xenophobia in the film for people behind, should they choose to.
Famke Janssen doesn't really understand children at all, because she knows that her daughter is going to follow U2 around Europe. And she at some point says, it's what all the kids are doing. No kids are doing it. No, not one kid is doing that. Chunky pervert, yes, of course. They've already got their tickets, but not fucking U2, who haven't made a relevant song in 20 years. And no self-respecting 17-year-old is going, fucking love the new U2 album. Man, Bono nails it. Bono nails it. It speaks to me.
I'm watching it thinking, well, this is setting everything up for U2 to have a song on the end credits. But they don't.
Yeah.
They don't. Nope. So it wasn't even some kind of deal they did. It's a bizarre choice. If it was 1987, fine, but it's not. It's 2008.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. So let's talk about Amanda, a.k.a. the worst friend ever. Fuck Amanda. Fucking liar.
Fuck, you're a fucking liar. You're a liar, Amanda. Fuck you, Amanda.
Unbelievable. So no sooner have they arrived 3,000 miles from home, she shares a cab with a man that she then tells them where they live. She dances in that way when an actor who's not 19 pretends to be 19, which is like her arms are kind of above her head and she's like jumping with her bum out, but she's not pissed. That doesn't make any sense. And then tells Kim to lose her virginity. Fucking hell, Amanda.
But she gets punished for it. You guys are angry with Amanda now, but she gets punished.
Yeah.
If you're looking at this from a puritanical point of view,
there's any other way to look at it. It's like she is literally, like, if this were a slasher movie, she's the one having sex in the woods and she gets killed. Yeah. But she's, I mean, she also is a bit of a moron because they meet Peter, is it, the guy from the airport, and like he takes them to the property so he knows where they live. And if that isn't enough, she says, we have the whole place to ourselves, to him. And then she may as well go, my mother's maiden name, here's my postcode, do you want a set of keys? And I was like, fucking Amanda.
I'm really into sex traffickers. Like, let's just cut to the chase, save each other a bit of time, but I'm into this, no problem.
But then she does like the Hives, so, you know, every cloud.
So Amanda is promptly kidnapped. Kimmy is in the bathroom. I can't remember. Oh, no, because she's got to ring Brian constantly, her dad, which leaves her. It's like that apartment from Inception where she seems to be on the other side of the road, but she's still in the same apartment somehow, looking through from the bathroom. I presume there's a courtyard involved, whatever. Yeah. Anyway.
It's so well done, though, that bit.
Yeah, brilliant.
I absolutely love like when she's looking across and like it's somehow... Like the whole, like very cleverly, credit to Pierre Morel, the director, because it sort of sets up that idea of just like being trapped and the inevitable. And like you're watching something. And although in that moment you're safe, shut in the bathroom, you know that they are going to come for you because they're going to check the apartment. It's great.
Yeah. So we're going to get onto the big scene, but let's have a break first because.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Jackmate's Happy Hour is back for a brand new season. It's the podcast where we talk to some of the most exciting people in the world, from Ricky Gervais.
In some ways, fame makes you a better person. You know, it's like, I don't believe in God. I don't believe in God's watching me, but I know someone with
everyone else's.
To undercover police officers.
Can you see the fading scar there, gentlemen?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's where I was stabbed in the neck by a drug dealer once.
Or we just talk about whatever's making us laugh right now.
When you think back to school kid banter, like, it's well funny because of how immature it is. We had this teacher called Mr. McGibbon, and he had this big cushion that he was teaching us how to rugby tackle on. He just ran up to it, rugby tackled it, but landed on top of it, and one of the kids shouted, "It's not your wife, sir."
That is funny.
Listen to Jackmate's Happy Hour on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your pod.
Jackmate's Happy Hour is a Stakhanov production.
Okay, good. So, so I'm rushing towards this because although it's hard to know what to say, but let's do the scene. Kimmy is on the phone to Brian. The kidnappers come into the apartment. Brian tells her what to do. Let's talk about it, but I find it hard to talk about it. I will just say the reason why it works, well, one of the reasons it works so well is that Brian has been set up as a very overly protective dad, but more or less the first thing he says to her once he realizes the gravity of the situation is the truth, which is they are going to take you. And that flip reverses everything. He doesn't try to reassure her. He just tells her a fact. And that is really scary.
But the reason he tells her that fact, the reason he says, now, the next part is very important. They are going to take you. It's because he's seen her run. So he knows she doesn't have a fucking chance.
She's got no grace whatsoever.
There's no way she's running away from those people. Just accept that they are going to take you.
Yeah, that's fair. Also is distracted by the briefcase because he whips out this like dad briefcase, but it's full of really cool shit to record the phone conversation. And the bit I'd forgotten, but the minute you can see feet from her perspective under the bed, I knew it was going to happen, is that like the horror drag. So she thinks she's fine and then she's dragged away from shot by a bad man.
And once she's been dragged, you don't see the aftermath of the dragging. You see Neeson's face listening to her screaming. And he's doing some serious face acting there as well.
His face is doing a lot. I did read another article, probably also in Empire, which explains why the speech is so effective. Do you want to hear the theory?
Yeah.
So it mimics rhetoric that works on a subconscious level. So I will tell you what that is. It's predictive. I will, they will, all of that. Repetitive, skills, will, all of that. Abstract things, like I have a very particular set of skills, with physical details, which is I will find you. Simple language, that's kind of it. And said slowly.
Wow.
Which also
that's
is very
great.
Effective.
Chris, you should definitely put that up on Twitter, the article
on
that's
the Twitter
related to. Yeah. So if you, Chris, if you could action that, that'd be great.
Yeah, you're right.
I hadn't thought about that. The very particular set of skills. Why that is brilliant is because you've got to fill in the blanks.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about it in that respect. It reminds me of a film, if you've never ever seen the film Rolling Thunder, where they kidnap a guy and someone says, go get the kit. And you don't, it's because you don't know what's in the kit that makes it more frightening than actually if they said, go and get the forceps or something, or go and get a knife. And
yeah, that's a good point.
But Vicky,
not the gym kit, not the fucking gym kit.
Vicky, I'm wondering if you're going to attempt to do a bit of the speech in the Liam Neeson accent.
No, I'm not. I feel like, what's the point? Because Alex has done it so well twice already, and I have a feeling he's not done. So I don't see the point. Does anybody want to say anything else?
Have we had a spoof of Taken yet? I don't think we have, because I think what you would do is when he starts doing that speech, the other person just hangs up before he can get anywhere with it.
there's a few on YouTube, like, where people are ringing up, like, and he's lost his dog and stuff. It's quite good, but
So moving away from the speech, which is a shame. So like I said before, I really don't think the film recovers from this extremely high point. Then we're into quite a lot of, it's fun, but it's very convenient stuff. So Brian's trying to figure out who these Albanians are. Turns out there's only one Albanian gang in Paris that's got a Marco in it. So that's pretty straightforward.
And he borrows Stuart's plane, though. Stuart's got a private plane, which really helps him out. And indeed helps anyone else flying to Paris at that time, because he's sitting on the plane with his dictaphone and he just keeps playing like Marco's voice, just going, good luck.
Good luck.
Good luck. Good luck. Good luck. Good luck. Good luck. Good luck. Imagine if you were stuck next to that in economy. Like, you'd be like, fucking turn that shit off. Good luck.
But it's such a good moment that he gets with Stuart, because Stuart's all of a sudden like, oh shit, I'm sorry for being such a cunt to you before, Brian. I can help you. We can beat that out.
You say that though, but it's great because Stuart's like, what can I get? What can I give you? And he's like, I want a plane an hour ago. And Stuart's like, done. Amazingly, when they do get Kim back at the end and they arrive back at the airport, and Stuart's like, yeah, all right, cool. Thanks for bringing her back. And Liam, like, gets put in a cab home. It's like, yeah, no, you... Now she's back. All those perks, yeah, give them back. No more private jets. No more limos. You're not even travelling in our car.
Oh, do you not notice the bit where Stuart offers to carry Liam Neeson's bags? That happens in the airport. Stuart's like, oh, can I carry your bags? He's like, get off, Stuart. I carry my own fucking bags. It's so good. I love it. Anyway, so then we've got Mr. Exposition, who's Brian's old buddy from back in his Black Ops CIA days, who sets the clock for Brian with a lot of convenient, knows a fucking shitload about this sex trafficking gang in Paris, even though it's not his line of work anymore because he protects Holly Valance for a living or whatever. But he's like, you now have 96 hours before she disappears.
No,
which kind of makes sense.
That's his buddy who says that. That's one of his old unit who he's on the phone to, who gives him the clock. He sort of says, like, normally with things like this, you've got 96 hours before you'll never find her again. It's the guy who's in the autopsy room in Independence Day and has the knife strap on in Seven. He's in loads of stuff. It's him. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
He's one of Brian's ex-unit who look less like close protection and more like they run a fishing tackle shop. Like those guys.
So Brian, I would say this is where it's interesting, given everything we know about Brian, is maybe he's not that good at his job, because the first thing he does is goes to find the spotter, Peter, who gets in the cab. So I just remembered a brilliant bit. Peter's then trying to pick up more girls. So a girl gets off a plane. She's Swedish. What's your name? It's Ingrid. It's like, of course it's fucking Ingrid. And she's really blonde. It's like, yeah, central casting. Have you got a Swedish girl? Yes.
Before he goes after Peter, he does visit the apartment where the kidnapping happened, though. And we've got a scene straight out of Manhunter where he does the Will Graham thing where he can sort of go into a trance and see what happened, which is a skill that people in films only seem to have. But he's sort of almost time traveling back to figuring out how it happened, where it happened. And then, yeah, he's after Peter.
It's kind of disappointing, that scene, because I'm like, if I've already seen it, I don't want to see it again. And he doesn't discover anything new. He doesn't find any evidence, does he?
No.
Yes. It's pointless.
Yes. Doesn't he take... I thought he... Isn't there a phone and he takes the SIM card out of the phone?
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
you're right.
To be honest, I've just said that. I don't remember what he does with the SIM card. Oh, he puts it into a machine. Yeah, he puts
in a metro station.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it's a machine in a metro station that's got such advanced technology that it can zoom in so clearly on Peter's face and then just print it out for you and off you pop. Brilliant.
Yes, there you go.
So he gets Peter killed, which is a stupid thing to do. And then he needs the help of his friend, his so-called friend, Jean-Claude, who, this is my favourite line of the whole film, is doing a little bit more exposition about the Albanians. And I think Liam Neeson says, like, where did they come from? And he says, well, they just showed up from the east. And it's like, yeah, because Albania is east of France. So rather than elaborating on the geopolitics, he's like, they just came from that direction.
He's the Minister of the Interior, Deputy Director of Internal Security. Yeah, cheers, mate. I could have figured that out for myself.
That's so good. Well, east. Oh, right. Yeah. What? Where Albania is? Yeah. It's perfect. Anyway, then there's a bit of running around. At some point, Liam Neeson detoxes a trafficking victim. This is like the gangbang incident from the other week. I've never said detox before, clearly.
Is it detox?
Detoxes a trafficking victim just because he fucking can. And it's like, yeah, I buy that 100%. You've got all this equipment. You've got a drip from somewhere. Yeah, and you know how to detox someone. Of course you do.
He's got all this equipment, and yet he doesn't seem to have people on the ground. So he hires a random translator that I think he found on Google.
Like, yeah.
If he's got all these skills, why is he having just to hire some random bloke so that he can help him when he's going to find the sex workers? And I found that scene very awkward when Brian Mills is talking to the sex workers in the street and asking them if they do open lip kissing.
Oh, yeah.
Very uncomfortable. Liam's not very good undercover, is he?
But you see, I mean, this all feeds into like this idea. He doesn't have any people on the ground. The French interior minister guy, who apparently he worked with at some point, does not like him. His old unit are pretty passive aggressive in the stories they tell about him. I don't think a lot of people like Brian very much. I think the evidence is there. I think he's, you know, he can be difficult.
Yeah. And his wife, she fucking hates him. Like, right, when what does she say it straight away? She's like, oh, fuck off, Brian. I can't even remember what she says. She's like, you're the worst thing that ever happened to me or something. Yeah.
Eat really shit, Brian. Eat shit.
Fuck yourself, Brian. Get out.
Hey, I honestly think, you know, it's because, like, when Stuart offers to carry his bags, I think that's a prime example of why Brian's a bit of a dick. He's like, fuck off my bags. Get the fuck off my bags, mate. Don't touch my bags.
Just gonna help you. Yeah.
It's like, wow, nice guy, huh?
Liam Neeson, I presume, sort of charms his way into the apartment of Jean-Claude. Jean-Claude's wife knows him from back in the day. She makes him some dinner, and then, bam, he shoots her in the arm in order to get Jean-Claude to fess up about the inner workings of the corruption that he's involved in, which sort of is paying off the Albanians or taking a cut or whatever it is.
I love that moment. This was one of those moments where I couldn't remember it for a start. And it's a perfect scene because it's such a surprise that he does that. Mm. I thought he was going to shoot the guy, just wound the guy and go, there, now you're injured. Now you pretty much have to do what I say. Otherwise you'll bleed out or some such. But the fact he just shoots her, it's great. And it's only topped by another Pierre Morel movie, which is From Paris with Love with John Travolta, where John Travolta shoots his friend's wife's best friend in the head and kills her at a dinner party. She is a bad person in it, but it's great. That's an even better surprise dinner party death.
It feels very 24, though, and I think this whole film does, where Brian Mills is a bit like Jack Bauer, who are both hunting down and trying to find the people who've kidnapped their daughter, who's called Kim. They didn't bother changing the name. But 24 was all about seeing what extremes Jack Bauer would be pushed to track down his daughter or stop the terrorist plot. So it felt like 24 crossed with Bourne, I think, is why this one worked.
Yes.
What they were going for.
It was Die Hard 4.0. Was the movie that was actually going to be 24, the movie, which is another kidnapped daughter movie. And they just changed it from Jack Bauer and Kim to John McClane and his daughter and turned the 24 movie into a Die Hard movie.
So then after some stuff that I can't remember, even though I've seen this film three times. The reason I'm rushing towards this point is because as a scene, I find it very effective and it haunts me a little bit, which for a film like this is like quite a thing, which is the auction of trafficked women in the closed private booths, like an anonymous bidding system with a voice that's piped in and huge sums of money are changing hands. And Kimmy is sort of like pushed into the middle. And I can't remember the way it's said, but it's medically certified that she's a virgin. And that
she's
just
certified
makes me
pure. She's certified
oh,
pure.
Oh, shit.
They say.
So that just, that pinches. I don't like that. But the reason I like that scene is that to me, I'm maybe very naive, but that's too real to be entirely made up, do you think? So that sort of thing happens in the real world, no?
Yeah,
I mean, I know people are trafficked, but...
I saw it a couple of summers ago. They did it with dinosaurs in the last Jurassic Park. It's the same thing.
Yeah. This Velociraptor has been certified pure.
Clever girl.
Oh, very good. Oh. Very
good. Yeah, it's a really dark scene. I think this movie works best, actually, when it's really dark. I think they're like the awful little mobile brothel on the building site earlier, which we didn't talk about. That's pretty hideous. I think this scene is pretty awful. I mean, the only good thing I thought about this scene, if it is a good thing, is that Brian does now know how much Kim is worth if he ever... hit hard times. It must be really interesting for their continuing relationship to look at his daughter and go, I could get $500,000 for you any day.
Well, not any day, because she'd have to be pure. So
yeah.
It's a bit of a race against time.
I don't know. I mean, that run is gonna keep potential suitors away for quite a while.
Oh dear. So Kim is sold because Brian's pressing the button of this poor dude. Well, not poor dude, he's a bad man, whatever. Kim is sold. He kills a few people.
Poor guy. Oh. He's not even sure if he wants her. And yet, press it again. Suddenly he's $500,000 down and he's got a virgin. He didn't want that. Yeah.
Oh, and then there's another scene with a pipe to link it into Commando, because Brian's dangling from this pipe and then he's like, do you know what? I'm just going to use all my strength and don't give a shitness to pull this pipe off the ceiling and fight my way out of this room. Brilliant. And then my favourite bit of the film is Kim has been taken to what is meant to be a shakes, I'll call it a pleasure barge, but it looks like to me...
Pleasure barge.
Wait. We are Chunky Perverts. Welcome to the pleasure barge.
Could have just called it a boat, but yeah, pleasure barge.
Do you know what you're thinking of?
Boat.
You're thinking, because he's so large, you're thinking of Jabba the Hutt's floating barge in Return of the Jedi.
He does make you think of Jabba the Hutt, though, doesn't he?
He's horrible.
He's to. Yeah,
horrible.
He's really horrible.
Yeah, where they say they're being prepared, sir. It's like, whoa.
I mean, the thing is, the inside of the boat, I would say, looks like the boat of a wealthy man, but the outside of the boat looks like that pub on the Thames. Do you not think that?
The Tattershall Castle. Like
yes! I'm obsessed with that pub. I mean... Obviously, you know what I'm like. I love that pub. But to me, I don't think the Tattershall Castle is what you would be aiming for if you're a sheikh that's paid half a million dollars for a virgin or whatever. So Brian fights. I mean, I don't love this ending. I think it's a bit abrupt, and I like the setting. I like the luxury boat, but I would like Brian to have a big fight outside. I don't like that enclosed space fight thing. It's not for me. The best bit though is the Sheikh has got Kim and he's going to reason with her. And the minute he opens his mouth, Brian's like, "Bam, you're fucking dead. Shut up, Kim. I told you so. Get home."
the way you just portrayed that scene, I almost wish you'd been in the Liam Neeson role, because just if you'd walked in and gone, "Bang, you're dead, shut up." To me, that's a better piece of dialogue for that. "Bang, you're dead, shut up, shut up." Not enough of that. Not enough of action heroes shooting people and going, "Bang, you're dead, shut up, shut up." Shut up.
Shut up. I'm going now.
Literally just sort of verbalizing what they're doing. "Bang, you're dead. Shut up. I won. I'm leaving now. See ya. Goodbye."
Let's
walking
go.
Up, walking up the stairs. "Stay quiet. Stay down. Shut up."
And that's it. That's everything I have to say about Taken. It's an amazing, amazing film. And I don't think I'll ever get tired of it. I have seen Taken 2 and 3. I can't remember a single thing about them. I've seen Non-Stop. I've seen Commuter. I like Liam Neeson as a sad dad who will kick your ass.
Oh, you should watch Walk Among the Tombstones. It's pretty good. That's
I've heard it's good, yeah.
I like Run All Night as well. And he's got his three next films. One, he's a bank robber trying to clear his name. The next one, he's a rancher being pursued by cartels. And the third one, he's assassin for hire who becomes the target. So he's sticking with it. He's sticking with this subgenre.
He is so good at it, though. You can laugh at like some of the stuff that he's had to do, but I think fundamentally he comes across as such a really good, down to earth, likable guy that like you do like go, "Yep, I'm sold. I'm sold," as you're literally going to leave Electra. You basically have told us that the electricity will never go off in this room compared to other places that you've had to sort of do it makeshift. Here, it will never go off. I'm going to put the electrodes on you. I've done it. I've got the information, and now I'm going to walk out and leave you to slowly cook. That is your death, Marco. I'm going to cook you.
It's pro-torture, the film. It's anti-travel, anti-foreigners. There are lots of unpleasant messages, I think, in the film. It's also kind of... I'm confused as well about what we think of Brian, because they kind of make it clear that he lost his family and lost his daughter because of his job. But then he regained his daughter because of his job. So are we pro his job or anti his job? I'm not sure. I guess we're pro.
It's almost Shakespearean in its tragedy, really, if you think about it. I think the scene in the kitchen where he's pretending to be on the inside with Jean-Claude and he wants to get Marco to say good luck in this very convoluted scene. But he's like, "I'm here to take a bigger cut. Your boss sent me," or whatever. And he has this rant at the Albanian men about, "You come over here and you do this, you do that." It's like, I don't know about that. I don't think that's necessary. Like, they're bad men. It doesn't really matter where they're from.
Oh, yeah, when he's acting as though he's from the French Interior Security Ministry and yet is speaking in an American accent that he doesn't even attempt to hide. Yes, yeah.
Yeah, and no one says, "I detect a little bit of Irish there. That's weird. How did you get this job?"
But I think this film had two legacies. One was it created this new career for Liam Neeson and a bunch of knockoffs as well. But also, it was quite negative, the legacy for Albania and the tourist industry there. To the point that they created an advert called Taken by Albania, in which Albanians are telling, sort of directing their to camera, talking to Liam Neeson, explaining why their country is so lovely and talking about the canyons, the lakes, the fjords and all this. And so I've watched this advert. They literally say, "You've made everyone think the people from Albania are criminal thugs and on the lookout for a daughter to kidnap."
"Hey, Liam, we love watching your films. And we think you're very talented, but we got a bond because of you."
"I will find you, Marco from Trubuya."
"You've made people of the world think that we Albanians are criminals, thugs, and always on the lookout for daughters to kidnap. Well, maybe it's time for us to show you our specific set of skills, take you on a plane, because we think you will be taken by Albania."
I've been to Albania and I was scared because of Taken. And so, it's not like that.
Chris, it's all very well saying that, but they're not going to tell you about the sex trafficking, are they? If they're making, think about it. If they're making the movie, they're going to say the nice stuff. Think about it, mate. Clever. They're being clever.
They say we want to show you our specific skills, so you will be taken by Albania. And then it ends with the actor who plays Marco saying,
"Oh wait, please tell me he's horribly burned, still in the chair, going, 'This is what Liam Neeson did to me.'"
He says, "The house of an Albanian belongs to God and to the guest," and then he directs people to www.takenbyalbania.com.
I really don't think that's a great website. If you're trying to sort of distance yourself from the idea that Albanians take people, and you know, you come across a website called Taken by Albania.
The whole campaign was taken by Albania. I'll just say, I will post that on our Twitter, unless Vicky wants to stick it on the Twitter. I can.
You're all right. So if there's any more for any more, or do you want to do the bits?
Oof. Yeah, Chris, how are you feeling, buddy?
Yep.
Okay, great. So, Chris, what was your best scene?
Get under the bed.
Jesus. Oh, say it to me again.
Yeah, all right. All right, we're still recording right now, Chris, but what was your... Vicky just wants to know your best scene, and then she'll do whatever you want.
But I think, for all the reasons we said, but also because I think if his predecessors in the action hero mold, Stallone, Schwarzenegger, Jean-Claude Van Damme, I don't think they could deliver that speech. And that's what sort of sets this apart from those action movies and what essentially changed the genre. So it's not just the best scene in the movie. I think it really did change cinema.
Yes. What about you, Alex?
Yeah, it's the one you mentioned where he... it's the kidnap scene when he's on the phone to her and he does say, "The next part is very important. They are going to take you because you run ridiculously." That's my favourite scene.
Yeah, me too. The thing I forgot to mention before when I was talking about the rhetoric is it copies or follows the pattern laid out by two other very famous speeches. We will fight them on the beaches and I have a dream. And so it follows that template, which is why it's so effective and taps into your unconscious need to be guided through a speech. It's very good. MVW, Alex?
My MVW, Neeson. He nails it. Like, the fact that he made this movie and he's so good in it, and the fact that it has literally created about 297 knockoff movies in which he plays exactly the same role. And although I didn't know it, I'm a big supporter of January Neeson. I think January Neeson is my new favorite thing in the world. I'm going to look out for January Neeson. And when Chris told me all the movies that are coming up, I'm like, seriously? Oh, that's actually made me so happy because he's so good in this part. So, yeah, it's Liam Neeson, baby.
And you, Chris?
Liam Neeson.
Yep, that makes sense. I was going to say the speech itself. I would like to have been in the room. Like, the rest of the script, there's nothing wrong with it, but it is very straightforward, if you will. But the speech is something else entirely. It's like being graced by God at a particular moment, taking your hand, you write it, and it's like, I don't know where that came from, but that's going to make me very, very wealthy. Perfect. One change, please, Chris.
There's something I wanted to ask you guys. This might not be my change. I want to get your opinion. How do you feel about him being called Brian Mills? Not one, but two quite boring names.
Yeah, it's rubbish.
He sounds like an insurance salesman rather than a killer. And I say that as the son of an insurance salesman. Like,
I can say that because my dad's an insurance salesman. Yeah, nice.
But he's called Ted Tilly. That would be a better name for a killer than Brian Mills.
I think I don't mind Brian Mills so much. I wish he'd spell it with an I. I find the Y just a little too playful, a little too whimsical. Like, it's Brian. Brian with a Y.
Because famously, Ian Fleming wanted to pick the most boring name he could for Bond. He picked James Bond. It was the name of an ornithologist. And he thought, as it was a boring name, it would work for an undercover spy. And of course, it's become synonymous with cool, the name James Bond. So I'm wondering if they thought Brian Mills would become synonymous with cool.
No.
But it hasn't.
It's not the worst name. One of the characters with ridiculous names. Did you ever see the movie Swordfish with Hugh Jackman? And
yeah. Ooh, I think I have.
He plays a hacker in that, if you can believe it. And his name, because you know how hackers have kind of cool names, his name in Swordfish is Stanley Jobson.
God. Bloody hell.
So Brian Mills has got it good because Stanley Jobson is ridiculous.
All right. If you're pro-Brian Mills, my actual change, I would lose the final two scenes, the family reunion at the airport and then that extra scene with Holly Valance, because I feel like you don't need either of those. And if it ended with him rescuing her and it goes to that sort of sad piano music and the credits, it would be a big, it's sort of a bang. Whereas this just feels like the air just coming out of a balloon and it's much less impactful. It just sort of goes down and down a couple of notches. So end with her, you know, saying, Daddy, you saved me, and him sort of walking off the boat with her as the credits come up.
Yeah, and also, you know, that relationship with Holly Valance is not going to go well, because the minute Holly goes, so you can actually sing, Kim. That's great. Now on to the dancing part of being a pop star.
What would your change be then?
So mine is, I really think the movie lacks... maybe not a proper villain, but a villain dispatched in the correct order. Like, I don't like the way it does, like, the bad guy deaths. Because as the movie goes, so you've got the dude who he's trying to catch at the airport, the charming guy who gets hit by the bus, kills him, then he kills the pimp, then he kills the good luck dude, Marco, then he kills the English auction guy, St. Clair, then he kills the sheik and his bodyguard on the boat. And, like, he kills people who are just introduced... and then 5 minutes later, he's killed them. And although Marco gets a bigger death, he's still killed, like, you know, two-thirds of the way through the movie. And then we're on to the auction guy, St. Clair, and the Sheik is the sort of end-level baddie. For me, like, the good luck bit at the start where Marco teases him on the phone during the massive speech and he goes, good luck, at the end. And he's like, fuck you, I don't give a fuck, you're never going to catch me. Marco should be the last guy he kills. He should be the ultimate bad guy. Because as it goes, you're like, I don't really... Who's the Sheik? I mean, he's clearly a pervert and now he's dead and his bodyguard's dead. You want him... Chunky like, you pervert. Chunky pervert. You want Marco to exist throughout all those scenes, maybe like dragging Kim off, like, because partly because she's his money and partly because, like, he's now... got this vendetta against Brian killing him and like stopping him selling her. So I just really feel that it sort of fluffs its bad guys a little bit. I want Marco to be the last kill.
Yeah, and I think there could be a bit more detective work because, like you say, he gets a bad guy in front of him, he kills them, and then he moves on. And there's no progression in the fighting and there's not very much detective work. So, yeah, I agree. Anyway, that's not my change, though. Guess what my change is? Let's follow you two through Europe. I think it's a... I don't actually think we should follow you two. That would be ridiculous. But when Liam Neeson finds Kimmy's secret map of Europe and it's got Berlin and Madrid and whatever, all these brilliant cities marked off, you as the audience are like, fucking brilliant, we're going to go to those cities. And then we don't. We stay in Paris. And it's a shame. So, logically... logistically it's hard because then you've got Brian on an interrail or Brian hitching a lift with some gap year kids, whatever, and that's not good. But it would be nice to see him in Berlin,
Are you basically saying you'd like Taken to be more like the sex comedy Euro Trip but with guns? Because I'm going to say, as a massive, massive fan of Euro Trip, I am totally on board with that idea.
It's a good idea, isn't it? So that's my change. Yeah.
The tagline. Oh my God, the tagline could be Tour de Force. Because he's using force.
I will find you and I will something. Yeah. Great, that's it.
All right then, so Commando on Monday, Taken today. It's time for the verdict.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
My choices, so I'll go last. I'm going to start with Christopher.
Well, I think both these films achieved what they set out to do, and it's very satisfying watching these blokes employ their specific set of skills. Taken is more sophisticated filmmaking, and It's fun, but I do think it turns into a bit of a slog towards the end. And although it's about exploitation, it does become a bit exploitative. And as we said, a bit xenophobic, a bit reactionary, even though I do like it when he electrocutes guys and shoots the wife. So I don't know. I feel conflicted by it, Taken. Whereas Commando is fun all the way. And it makes me so happy, Commando, for 90 minutes. So because of that, I'm currently taking my pants off as I'm going Commando.
Yay! Victoria, we have one vote for Commando. I know you were excited about Taken. Are you sticking with Taken?
Well, the thing is, Commando really surprised me because I wasn't expecting Arnie to punch his way out of a plane made of cardboard, and I wasn't expecting Cindy to fire a rocket launcher at police officers, and not backwards for sure. So I was really pleased by Commando because it just a lot of things happened that I was not in a million years expecting. But you have to remember, the first time I saw Taken, I saw it without swearing and I still loved it. Now, you know me and I like a swear. That means it's an amazing film. I'm sorry. And I can't be dissuaded from that. Put a bit of swearing in it. It's fucking perfect. So Taken, obviously.
Right then. So that's one for Commando and one for Taken. Oh, it's nice. It was my. They were my choices and I get to make the final votes, which I'm very, very pleased about. I completely get what you're saying, Chris. I think Commando makes me feel so warm and fuzzy inside. Considering it's a movie in which lots of people die, I'm like, no, oh, it's like a hug, a big Arnie hug. And I think a lot of that to do with the color palette of it. It's so bright. It's like a rom-com color palette just with death. And Taken is much more grim, much more dark. It's great, and it gave us Liam Neeson as this new action hero, which I have enjoyed his movies, even if you don't really get to see him fight a wolf in the grey. Well, that was a lie, that trailer. So I'm going to be honest. It's going to be Commando! Whoop, whoop, whoop.
Oh, no! You fooled me!
Yeah.
You fooled me!
Yeah, no, I will be honest. I'd made my mind up after watching them both. I hadn't made it up before I sat down to watch them this time. That's the whole point of the rewatch. But I did immediately after sitting down to watch both of them, go, it's Commando. It's so stupid. And weirdly, I think I remember watching it as like a 10-year-old and going, this is stupid, but it's brilliant. Yeah. And that sentiment has continued through every rewatch. Even now, I'm finding different things about how fucking stupid Commando is. And yet, I could watch it again tonight because it's so fucking brilliant. And it's just, I don't know what it is. There's something. It's one of those movies. And I think the reason we're still talking about a 1985 Arnie action movie like today is because there's something going on under the surface that we're not quite aware of how to put our finger on or how to qualify in Commando that makes it just one of those timeless, brilliant movies. So Commando. Commando is our winner this week. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Great then. Let's look forward in time to next week's shows. Chris, you gave us a clue on our last episode. What was the clue again?
Swinging in the Rain.
Would you like to guess, Victoria?
No, I'm fine.
No, nope, me neither. Me neither. I don't want to guess. I'd just like to be told.
All right, Alex, I'm going to let you pick a year for you to do. Do you want to do 1980 or 1996?
Just because, you know, I was actually alive in 1980 and Victoria had been alive 5 years more, I'll pick 1980.
I wasn't even alive. Shut up.
All right. Alex, you have got Caddyshack from 1980.
No!
And Vicky, you have got Happy Gilmore from 1996.
Lovely. Okay. No golf puns spring to mind, but lovely work, Chris. Thank you. Fantastic. Well, that's it for us. Commando is the champion of this week's episode. We are going golfing next week. Four? Nope. Yeah.
You just shouted four for no reason. It didn't work. What an idiot.
You know, I like to end as I started, sort of like... misguided. Is there any other business before I say goodbye? Because I feel like this is the point of the show where I always go bye-bye, and then Chris goes, nah!
No, I don't think
Chris?
Actually, no. There isn't.
Great stuff. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back doing Happy Gilmore and Caddyshack next week. That is your homework. Thanks again. And do rate and review us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. It means a lot. Bye-bye for now.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.